there are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are golden retrievers. Which means Tubi is more popular than using meat-flavored toothpaste. More popular than never figuring out what W-A-L-K spells. More popular than kicking your leg when a human rubs your belly just right. Tubi, it's more popular than golden retrievers. See you in there.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Clear hands, cool hearts, hit loose!
This is the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast.
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Stop by 9390 Rogers Avenue for the best liquor, beer, and wine deals in the River Valley.
Arkansas wins a national championship!
Check out Eastside Liquor on Facebook for weekly specials.
Say goodbye! Darren McFadden, 80 yards, touchdown!
We've got the voice of the Razorbacks, Chuck Barrett, here on Halftime for a couple of segments. We do this each Tuesday with Chuck. Morning, Chuck. What's going on?
Well, I'm doing well. How are you guys today?
Doing well, man. Doing very well. How was I listened a little bit to Eric Musselman live last night. It's not the easiest shows I would imagine to be doing, considering the team is struggling right now. But how'd that go last night?
Well, it went fine. He was good, as he always is, and he's a professional. And I know they're frustrated. Everybody's frustrated right now. And you know, there's just not much time to get the ship righted. I mean, you're in the middle of it now. You're into conference play. You're 1-4, and you've got 3 of 4 on the road. You know, 3 of your next 4 on the road. So it's a daunting task, and I guess we'll begin to find out if they're up to it tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, they're going to be competing. You know, Coach Muss is a competitor. They're going to be trying to figure something out. Chuck, I don't know. We were talking yesterday about maybe having some type of like hockey line shift where maybe you bring a group of guys out there for 3-4 minutes and say, hey, I need 100% effort. Let's go get it. And then you bring somebody else in. Then we were talking about maybe running the offense through Brazil. You know, he's your best player. We don't really run the offense through. He kind of disappears at time. I don't know. What do you expect? What do you think we'll see? Maybe that matchup zone again. I don't know. But what do you think we'll see?
Well, I think each game's going to be different. And you know, from an Arkansas perspective, I mean, you know, when you play one of Chris Beard's teams, what it's going to be like. I mean, it is going to be a really physical game. And you know, you talked about being competitive there. You know, right at the beginning, and I think that's the first order of business. Because if you're competing, if you're really competing, you play through contact.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, sometimes you're the one that dishes it out. And I think sometimes when one team really physically dominates another, even though in stature they're not that much bigger, I tend to think that's a sign, you know, of what kind of team you've got. Now, you know, Ole Miss has a 7'5 guy. You know, who, he just swats everything away. He hasn't started, but they bring him off the bench. And when you're 7'5", he's going to block some shots. So I think they're going to have to attack. I think they're going to have to be aggressive going to the basket. They're going to have to rebound. That's the area, if you really look at the numbers in the conference games, that's the area where it's really been lopsided. I mean, it's like minus 11, I think, through 5 games, and maybe minus 5 or 6 offensive rebounds. So You know, and look, that goes to competitiveness. It goes to physicality and all the things that you have to have if you're going to win on the road.
You talked with him yesterday a bit about point guard and how, you know, things don't necessarily, like a weakness doesn't get exacerbated until you start playing in the conference, because these teams are scouting you a lot differently than the non-conference teams. And they're just better athletes, too, overall, for the most part. The thing that's really hit me watching in these SEC games, Chuck, is just how difficult it is for Arkansas to score right now. I mean, they're the second lowest scoring team in the league. I did not expect that. You know, it's like you put up 105, or I think it was 105 against UNC Wilmington, but that's UNC Wilmington. I still would expect that the team would be able to, you know, get to 75 points right now. And I just wonder, you know, the best half they played, L. Ellis, was really good against A&M, but you're just not getting consistency from that position specifically. And I just wonder how much that's had to do with an inability to score. There's other things that go into it, too, you know, the fundamentals of cutting to the rim and moving and everything, but it does start with the point guard.
It does start there. You know, they're probably not as happy as they'd hope to be with the play at that spot, but I don't know that it's entirely on the point guard. You know, ball movement is a five-guy thing. And, you know, when you look at the number of plays that I don't think they're necessarily designed this way, but they just turn into isolation plays. There's a lot of them, and too many of them, frankly. So I think that, you know, you look at the number of assists that Arkansas has had in the games they've won, and you look at the number of assists in the games that they've lost, there's a striking difference. One of the things that I thought was most impressive about South Carolina was they had 10 assists on their first 11 made baskets. Mm-hmm. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they closed with 20 assists on 28 field goals. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but that's really good. And when you look at Ole Miss's numbers, you look at their offensive numbers, look at the high assist totals. You know, they got guys averaging nearly five. They got one guy averaging nearly five and a couple averaging, you know, right around three. And you look at the assist to turnover ratio and the number of assists on the number of made baskets in conference play. You know, that's what good teams do. You know, good teams share the ball. And right now, Musk talked about this last night, the number of passes. They're simply not passing enough. They've got a certain number that they want to hit. And they're not coming anywhere close right now. And again, I don't think it's necessarily by design that they end up in isolation plays as much as they do. I just kind of think that, you know, that's just what it turns into sometimes.
I think back to the first couple games in the SEC play with Mitchell and Graham when they were back there and they got in there and had some energy and brought some, and then you don't see them playing much the last couple games. And the same with Khalif Battle. I just wonder how hard it's been for him this year to find that seven guys, that eight guys that he trusts. And it seems like when they're out there playing, Chuck, they don't really trust each other. They're kind of just going through it. Once we pass it once or twice, then we're just going to go one-on-one. We're going to try to take them to the rack. And it's just a little bit of standing around. But if they'll be a little more cohesive and trust each other, then you got a chance.
I'm sure you're right on that. I'm sure you are. And, you know, I don't think they've finished tinkering. I don't think that, you know, we've seen the last of going to the end of the bench, and I don't think he wants to do that. I just think right now he's trying to find somebody who's going to bring energy and effort. And sometimes it's not the guys that you think it's going to be. Now, he did say that they had they went 3 hours live yesterday. And, you know this, Matt. A lot of times in basketball practice, I mean, you're going to – you know, the scout team's made up of GAs, or mm-hmm. you may be scrimmaging and three or four of the guys out there are GAs. You know, they went team on team, I guess I would call it, yesterday. There were no GAs out there, and they went live, and Musk said it was about 3 hours, and, you know, he said they learned a lot about being competitive during the course of the practice yesterday. So they're going to need every bit of that. You know, all you've got to do is just look at the numbers, look at the calendar, look at the schedule. You know, they're going to have to turn this thing around in a hurry. And, you know, it is going to start with, I think anyway, sharing the ball on the offensive end and being a whole lot tougher on the defensive end.
Yeah, I like that. Going A on A is what you're kind of doing in practice. You're competing, and they get a feel for each other. If you find a group of guys that play good, so you can kind of be on the same page, and then it's a way to compete. It's a way to, you know, you get there in the first half, you got your group go, then another group go, and you're able to track it. And you're like, man, whoever's competing, who's ever playing better, you're going to get more playing time. Not necessarily the single person that's scoring the points, but the guys that are playing together, because that's what we got to have. One guy playing hero ball, you're not going to win in the SEC.
Well, I think you're exactly right there, and I think you're hitting on a key point. When it, you know, how many teams have we seen over the years, guys? You both of you follow basketball. How many teams have we seen where a guy averages 20, 22, 23 points a ball game on a team that finishes near the bottom?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a winning formula. You've got to have togetherness. You've got to have five guys. The ball's got to move. The cuts have to be hard. The screens have to be even harder sometimes. And when you get into conference play, you know, they're going to let some things go in terms of physicality. Sometimes it seems like they're calling everything ticky-tack out on the perimeter, and maybe sometimes they are. But I'm going to tell you, you get up around that rim, and they're letting a lot of things go now. Mm-hmm. You don't step in front of people and take charges like you did even two or three years ago. That's not how the game's called anymore. You've got to play through contact at the rim. You've got to be tough. And on the defensive end, you got to be able to dish it out a little bit, because they're going to let you.
It feels sometimes that they, you know, show that they act like they want to dish it out a little bit without even necessarily meaning it before the whistle is blown. And one juicy thing coming from the show yesterday, that, and you never know how these things equal out. You know, you'll hear about a pitcher in baseball that had a great bullpen but just couldn't get it on the field 15 minutes later, just couldn't throw a strike. You know, same thing happens in football. You know, Coach Pittman will say, we had a great week of practice. It doesn't always equal a good performance during the game. The thing that hit me listening last night, Chuck, Mus says this team practices better than last year's team. But that hasn't obviously, it hasn't played onto the court. That's got to be one of the more frustrating disconnects, that you have two really good days of practice before a game, but then an egg got laid.
Yeah, and I can tell it frustrates him. And, you know, obviously from the outside looking in, I don't know why it's that way, but he's generally he's a sincere guy. I mean, he kind of wears his heart on his sleeve, as we know, and I don't think he's the kind of guy that's going to say we've had great practices when they've had lousy practices. I think if they have a lousy practice, he's going to say we were really lousy today. So I do think that, you know, when he says that, he means it. But obviously, it's, you know, there's been some problem transitioning that into the game. But what the answer is there, what the reason is, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I've been around guys that they're practice players, then they get to the game, and I don't know if they get tight. I don't know what the message is. I don't know, but you've seen it. You'll see it from every level, being junior high, high school, college to professional. They're out there at practice and they're all world, and they get into the game and it's like they're either thinking or they're worried they're going to get subbed out or they're worried about making a mistake. I don't know, but it is. It's very frustrating.
Well, you'd know better than I, but I've got to believe that even when you're on your home floor, having all those people there and the pressure of the moment and everyone reacting to every move you make,
yeah.
Wherever you're playing, things are obviously a whole lot different. And, you don't have three or four coaches out there on the floor barking in your ear. I mean, when you're at practice and you got three or four coaches out there on the floor, you got somebody within 2 feet of you, and it's quiet, so you can hear every word they're saying. And some guys, for whatever reason, seem to drift. And but that's been happening since they started playing ball.
Chuck, last thing on basketball, and then we'll break. We'll move on to the NFL next segment. So You know, I hate where they sit us for the LSU basketball broadcasts. For the women's game Sunday, I'm over in the corner of the end zone. They sell the seats at the radio table next to you for like $1,500 or something. You can sit next to the visiting announcer and watch him do his thing. Can't even see all the way down the floor. So I texted Chuck a photo of it, kind of complaining it, and he sends me a photo of Shaq sitting next to him at a game that he broadcast against LSU. When did that happen, and did you try to give Shaq a headset?
You know, it was 3 or 4 years ago, and we were on the side, but it was the last seat before the fans started, and I was following the action at the other end of the floor. But, you know, when someone sits down, you can kind of feel them. You know, even if you're turned in the different direction, you can kind of feel them. And I knew somebody had sat down, and I didn't really pay attention. Play went back down to this end, and then it went back down to the other end. And then all of a sudden, I looked over, and I'm like, my God, that's Shaq. So, like, we go to a timeout, and I'm trying to be cool. You know, I'm trying to be cool. And he sees I'm trying to, like, sneak a selfie. And so he like leaned in, and everything was okay then. I've told this story before. I've never been more impressed with a celebrity than I was that night with Shaquille O'Neal. And I was not a fan, frankly, until that moment. But the way he carries himself, the kids that came up to him, there wasn't security around him. He didn't have a bodyguard. There were no velvet ropes. People came up to him nonstop. And I'm not going to sit here and say he held a long conversation with all of them. If he'd done that, you know, it'd have taken all night. But he signed everything. And he didn't motion for somebody to come over and stop him from coming up. And, I mean, the game was going on. But just the way he handled himself that night, I was really impressed. I've been a Shaq fan ever since. But, to look over and... there's Shaq. I mean, that just doesn't happen every day.
That's wild, man. I'm just trying to put myself in a situation like this. Like, man, this is just annoying. They got people sitting right next to you here. They're cheering during the game and everything. And then I know what you mean. You can feel somebody sit next to you, especially if they're 7'2", 300 pounds. You look over and give them a scowl and be like, oh, but for you, that's perfectly okay. Welcome, Shaq. This is your arena.
It was a really cool moment. Thankfully, I took a... you know, halfway decent picture, I guess.
It was a halfway decent photo, that's for sure.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
it's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Dave and his team have all your holiday drink options. That includes Fireball and Bailey's Chocolate, Jack Daniel's Crown Salted Caramel, winter seasonal beers, eggnogs, and more. Come by Eastside Liquor, 9390 Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith. Now back to the podcast. Let's look over to the NFL playoffs and the conference championship games coming up on Sunday. Chiefs-Ravens, 2 o'clock. Lions-Niners, 5:30. Chuck, I could see a situation where either of the road teams picks up a victory here. I'd give the Chiefs the edge to get a win on the road over the Lions. But that might have a little bit
Chiefs play Baltimore.
Right, I know, but I'm saying the Chiefs more on the road than the Lions here. But I think that's more to do with I think the Ravens are the best team in football right now. That's why I wouldn't think the Chiefs get that win. What do you think we're going to see on Sunday?
Well, the Ravens have been better over the course of the season. But I got to tell you, I was impressed with Kansas City going to Buffalo and winning the way they did. I mean, you know, I know the Buffalo kicker missed that field goal, but even if he makes it, I mean, we all know what was going to happen. Mahomes was going to come down there, we're going to score, and Kansas City was going to win the game. I mean, he's just got a knack. He's a big game, big play kind of guy. So I certainly wouldn't rule him out, but I would still give Baltimore the slight edge, the very slightest of edges. San Francisco's defense is really good. They're really good. But, Detroit's riding that wave of momentum right now. And, you know, Jared Goff's really playing well. And I know Brock Purdy's Brock Purdy and McCaffrey and all that. But it would not surprise me if Detroit went out there and won that game. But I would still, you know, my brain would still say pick the Niners.
Man, the 49ers are tough. I'm a Christian McCaffrey fan. Not a lot of people talking about Dalvin Cook being picked up late by the Ravens. I think that's going to help them against the Chiefs. My question, Chuck, is do you think Brock Purdy, because when I look at the four quarterbacks left, I think it's not even close that Brock Purdy would be the fourth, that he's not, you're taking Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and even Goff over Brock Purdy. Do you think Purdy will be able to get it done?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, I mean, it's an 11-on-11 game, and Purdy's not going to do it by himself, and neither are any of those other guys. Purdy's got more weapons around him, mm-hmm. I think. And so, consequently, that, you know, given the fact that he is not necessarily Mahomes or, you know, Lamar Jackson or even Goff, he's enough with all those weapons around him. So, I still think that, you know, what he does is perfect for what they do as a team. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, he's the fourth of the four, no question. But if I'll put it this way, if San Francisco beats Detroit and gets to the Super Bowl, it probably won't be because of Brock Purdy. You know, if the other teams get to the Super Bowl, it may very well be because of their quarterback. You know, that the exception might be Baltimore with their defense.
Mm-hmm.
They may need their quarterback to win the game for them. I don't know. You know, we'll have to see how it unfolds. But San Francisco's shown that they don't have to have, you know, they've got to have really solid quarterback play. Does it necessarily have to be out of this world play? No. Let the guys that can make the out of the world plays make them, because they've got them.
And I remember thinking the exact same thing when Tom Brady was with New England, and they're in that first AFC championship game
against Oakland,
against Pittsburgh. They beat Oakland the week before.
That was the Snowgate, right? The fumble gate?
Right, with Walt Coleman. Yeah. But, I mean, it's almost the same conversation. Philadelphia and St. Louis were the NFC championship game. Philadelphia was quarterbacked by Donovan McNabb. St. Louis was Kurt Warner. The Steelers had Cordell Stewart, who was an MVP candidate that year. Brady would have been fourth in that list, too. That feels really silly to say all
these
years later.
Sixth round pick too, right?
It
yeah,
does.
All the other guys were first rounders.
We still
don't
know how this is going to go with Brock Purdy. This is just Brock Purdy in his first full year as a starter. But you're right about that. You're definitely right about that. It's just I wonder what sort of perspective we have 24 years later, Chuck.
Well, I don't think we'll say the Niners were good in spite of Brock Purdy. You know, I don't know that we'll say he's the guy that made the team. But he, again, is perfect for what they do. And that's all he needs to be. You know, he doesn't have to be first of the four. He just got to be perfect for what they do, because that's been pretty good.
Yeah. The one thing I've noticed, these quarterbacks in the playoffs, Chuck, they use their legs so much more.
They
will run as soon as they get a chance to get a first down. Lamar Jackson led the team in rushing last week against the Texans for the Ravens. That is Purdy. Purdy can do that, right? He's good enough. I mean, I think all four of these quarterbacks can use their legs a little bit.
Yeah, Purdy and Goff, I would definitely put behind Mahomes and Jackson.
Yeah.
Josh Allen's the one that, you know, he and Lamar probably, you know, Lamar Jackson are probably the two that, you know, I think that, you know, they can beat you with their legs. I mean, they're kind of like you. I mean, they think they've got an angle on them, and then they don't. So, I don't know that that's necessarily the case with Purdy and Goff, but, you know, they can do enough. They can do enough. Goff probably moves a little bit better, I guess, but, you know, I wouldn't want either one of them to take off unless they had to.
You got Brandon Allen, I believe, as the backup at San Fran, and then Frank Ragnow, Dre Greenlaw. I mean, you got Razorbacks making plays last week. I thought that was pretty cool.
Is that how you choose who you're rooting for here, Chuck? I'm rooting for Detroit, because I think it'd be really cool if Detroit gets to a Super Bowl and maybe even wins one. But how do you choose who you're rooting for here as a Cowboys fan?
Well, I'm a lifetime Cowboys fan. I hate the Niners.
Okay.
But I pull for Dre Greenlaw. I was not pulling for the Niners the other night because Dre Greenlaw plays for them or Brandon Allen plays for them. I like both those guys a lot. Think the world of them. But, you know, I disliked the Niners before those guys came along, and I'll dislike them after they're gone. But that doesn't mean I don't pull for those guys. I think Dan Skipper still is. I don't know if he's on the 53 man, or I don't know where he is right now in relation to that. But he's still got a uniform. I think
you've had two road teams win so far in the playoffs. The Packers won in the first round, and then the Chiefs won in the second round. How do you see it, Chuck? Do you think both home teams win this week?
Yeah, probably so. If I had to bet money on it, I would say yes. But I'll tell you, I would, if Detroit wins, I'd be kicking myself. If I was a gambler, you know, and I didn't bet Detroit and they won, I'd be kicking myself.
You take your seven in Detroit. Yeah.
I think that's a.
They're a close. I think that's a one possession game no matter what happens, that San Francisco Detroit game. I'd take my seven in Detroit.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think so. You know, Goff's going back to his old stomping grounds. I mean, he played there at Berkeley, and I think Jared Goff will play well.
Hey, I heard you guys kicking this around in the morning rush a little bit. You know, the idea of the NFL is all about parity. I mean, even you've had, so you get the Chiefs are the dominant team now, the Patriots for a long time. And keep in mind, New England and Kansas City, either one of those two teams have been in the AFC title game for how long now? 11, 12, maybe 13
years. Six straight years for KC, yeah.
Right. But, I mean, the NFL has partially so much parity because so many teams have access to the playoffs. What about college football now with a 12-team playoff coming up? Instead of a 4-team playoff, BCS was just two teams. That's part of the reason why college football has been dominated by, I mean, I don't know how many programs, 6-7 programs in the last 30 years. That'll change in this next year. I mean, I expect that to change with more access, more teams. That means potentially, I think hopefully, more randomness.
I hope so. I think you probably could orchestrate it more in professional football with 32 teams than you can in college football. I still think, though, in the pros, pick your sport, and I think this will be the same way in college sports, the most well-run organizations still win the most. You know, you may have an outlier. And there are some in pro sports. You may have an Arizona Cardinals, for example, jump up and go to the Super Bowl. But during most of my lifetime, whether they were in St. Louis or whether they were in Phoenix, you know, at the end of the day, they're still the football Cardinals. And because it's never struck me that they were, you know, very well-run organization. And you've got other organizations in the NFL that have, you know, generally speaking, fielded bad teams. Now, every once in a while, they'll jump up. But you still have 6, 8, 10 franchises out there that are just run better than all the others. And they're going to win more championships. They're going to be in the hunt more times than the others. I tend to think it'll be that way in college football particularly. Basketball is a free-for-all already, and it's going to continue to be. But in football, I tend to think that what I hope is that you have three or four teams in the good conferences that can vie to get into that 12. But I don't think that the heart of that group is going to vary that much. I think there's probably going to be six or eight regulars. And, we'll see how it goes. I hope there's parity, or at least a certain semblance of it. But I guess we'll see.
Chuck, appreciate you, man. Safe travels to Oxford. We'll be tuned in tomorrow night.
All right. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Chuck.
Chuck Barrett, voice of the Razorbacks, with us every Tuesday, right about the same time on Halftime. Tip off tomorrow's 8 o'clock. Chuck and Zim, 7:30 with the Courtside Show here on this ESPN Arkansas affiliate.
How much do you think, Phil, that, you know, in college, the turnover is a lot quicker? You know, kids are there now with the portal 1 year, but you're only 5 years to play four, where in the NFL, NBA, you can get a guy for a decade. You know, Steph Curry, LeBron, Tim Duncan, you know, can kind of help your team, yeah.
And it's becoming harder to hoard talent in college football. The portal is the reason why.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift, selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts.
The Alyssa Orange from Pig Trail Nation usually talks to us in Fayetteville. We've talked to her when she's been in Denver, in Virginia, other points around the United States of America. What is it, Alyssa, that brings you to the Big Apple?
Well, hello, guys. Good to see you. Be with you. I am here doing an Olympic meeting, so... We've been doing some Olympic meetings, got into town yesterday, and they've also been full of surprises. So I'm currently outside Yankee Stadium at the Hard Rock eating lunch, but we got the tour of Yankee Stadium and got to do some cool things. Part of our little tour included putting on some latex gloves and holding Babe Ruth bat from 1922, which was amazingly awesome, also nerve-wracking at the same time, so... It's been pretty cool.
Like a 52-inch bat. It was maybe the heaviest bat that was ever used in a game.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it's huge. And it's heavy. No one uses a bat quite like this. Not even. So I think 40 ounces, they were saying, is like the heaviest bat that's being used right now. This was 44, 45.
Oh, he was like he was walking up with a piano leg practice.
You think Aaron Judge probably has a big... I mean, what is his 50-ounce, 40?
We got to hold an Aaron Judge bat. Yeah, we got to hold one of those, too. His is, I think, 33 ounces.
Wow. Quick hands. Yeah.
So did you, as an Orioles fan, remind everybody around the Yankee Stadium who won the AL East this year?
They weren't shy about it, for sure. I also, like to throw in that 42 that sits in every ballpark around the country and remind everyone where he came from, too. So.
Yeah, well, they've got a number, 27, that they like to throw in people's faces as often as they can, too. Of Olympics, gymnastics just started. They've had a couple of really big weekends. There, how many? We've got connections, not just coach, but they're gymnasts on this team that will be in the Olympics or could be in the Olympics.
Yeah, and that's what's. I mean, everyone knows Jordan Weaver, right? As part of that Fab Five in 2012. I don't know how many people know that her assistant coach and also her husband. Chris Brooks also on the Olympic team in 2016, and Kyla Ross also an Olympian. So she has Olympic talent as coaching staff around her. And then next year coming in, Jocelyn Robertson, who trains with Simone Biles down in Houston, got to spend some time with her recently. She will be on the team next year as a freshman. So if you're watching the Olympics in Paris this year, look out for her name. She was on the world's team, and she is projected, as everything goes well, to be on the Olympic team. So it's exciting, but just gymnastics in general, I mean, you have to look at what Jordan Weaver has done to help bring in that kind of talent to elevate Arkansas to that next level, because the SEC is so deep and so talented. And for her to be able to bring the talent in that you're going to need to win championships, I think we're finally seeing it here in year four, that she has put together that right formula to continue to make Arkansas appealing, and we're seeing that in the results. So it's been pretty fun.
Alyssa, this Razorback basketball team, we head on the road to Oxford, take on Chris Beard and Ole Miss. And Ole Miss has lost two in a row. Now they've been on the road, and we know it's hard to win on the road. What's one thing, even if it's just rebound, even if it's just effort, what's one thing you want to see this Razorback basketball team do and do well against Ole Miss?
Well, effort's a good answer, but I don't want to take that one. You know, I would love defense. Play some defense, you know, three-point defense, which has never been a big strong suit for teams. Try to see defensively if you can shut down Ole Miss in their building. Because we know that these guys can shoot, and sometimes we also understand that, you know, shooting is one of those things is more of a feeling, but you can do a lot more and control a lot more with the defensive side. So I would love to see a defensive effort.
I think the wild thing is how, man, it was like over a month ago, you were pointing out, well, this team has more losses than any of Muss's teams up to this point of the season. And maybe they scheduled a little bit harder, but a loss is a loss, and that loss to Greensboro for me meant something. And I also wanted to believe that things would get turned around because of the history under Muss of always getting better right now. Like, now is the time. The thing, though, is, Alyssa, they've gotten worse, progressively worse. You know, like these... If you just look at the last three quarters, I know they beat A&M. That was a miserable second half. The two halves against Carolina, they couldn't defend at all. And like Matt said, last 10 halves, they've won only one of them. You know, you're hoping that there's a turnaround because you've got the history of that. But I think even when you listen to Muss talk, and if you've heard him talk even 2 weeks ago, I don't know, the signs were there that I'm not sure if he expects it.
Yeah, it's a different feeling. And you're right, Phil. I mean, we did something last week where it's like, well, I know a lot of people are panicking right now with this 0-3 start in SEC play, but when you look back at the way that they've started under Muss since he's gotten here, it hasn't been perfect by any means, but they've been able to turn it around. And so you had a little bit of confidence, Phil, that this team can figure it out. Then they beat A&M, but then the way that they ended up winning that game was still a nail-biter. And then the way they played against South Carolina, I go back to, well, maybe history isn't going to repeat itself. That this team just cannot find a way to click. Because it's not an overnight thing. And we gave it time. But I don't know how much time you can give. And you got to start winning ball games if you even want to be considered in the conversation for an NCAA tournament bid or try to win the SEC tournament to get that automatic bid. It's hard. And I just don't see what I have seen in the teams in the past with this team right now. And it's unfortunate because there's a lot of good talent. And I also want to say this, if there's anyone who deserves some credit on this basketball team, it's Tremon Mark. Like, if there's anyone who is actually putting his heart and soul into this team, it's Tremon Mark right now. And I feel for him because he can't get a whole lot of help around him right now.
Well, and these coaches are good, and so what they're going to do is they're going to try to take Mark away, and then it's who else is going to step up? Who's going to be that second player? Where's Brazil at? Where's Devo at? You were kind of looking like, well, he needs, to your point, Alyssa, yeah, he needs a little help.
Yeah, he does, and that's the thing, too. Like, Devo is the postseason Devo. We know what he's done. He's proven that he can be a guy in the postseason when you need someone, but he's never been an a year-round, all-around star all the time. He's never been that, and I don't think anyone wanted him to be that. He just needed to be a facilitator and a leader, and then you would have thought that it was going to be Trevin Brazil, but what I have seen from Trevin Brazil the past couple of weeks is, I mean, I hate to say disappointing, but that's how I feel. It just doesn't
He almost
feel...
looks disinterested, huh? Like he's just like kind of not lollygagging, but a little disinterest, just kind of going through the motions a little bit, it seems.
Well, and it's showing.
Hey, while it's fresh in your mind, and before we ask you about the games that are going on Sunday with your Miami Dolphins, real quick, while you're still thinking about it and you're watching these playoffs, what's a need they need to address in this year's draft?
I think they need some offensive line depth, and maybe bring in some more linebackers defensively and build some more depth there too. So I think those are the two places that I think you can address. Right off the bat.
Man, you got a favorite this weekend?
Yeah.
Who are you thinking? I know you're watching these games.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You know, I'm kind of on the Lions train, guys. I am all in on Dan Campbell. My dad liked to share a fun fact with me, as he usually does, that the other night, and Todd Bowles and Dan Campbell, two former Dolphin interim head coaches. And I said, Dad, you would only know that, but thank you for sharing. And so I like Dan Campbell, obviously Frank Ragnow, Dan Skipper, Jerry Jacobs on that team. So I'm all in on the Lions.
Okay. Hey, I saw Mike Nabors had a Zoom about an hour and 30 minutes ago. Talia Scott's returning to practice. He's missed four games.
That's great.
Yeah, and this comes at the time when Sailor Poffenbarger, you know, she wasn't as effective as usual. I know that there's something up with that right leg that was different than 2 weeks ago. I think she's been in a heck of a lot of pain. She's got a walking boot around when she's not playing or practicing. Didn't practice for a couple of days before LSU. Getting Talia back is huge, but I will say, like, they need their rebounders. You know, Dowd has got to stay on the court. She's been good at this. Without Sailor Poffenbarger, things could go sideways.
And man, this women's team can't catch a break, right? Like, you finally get Emery Ellis back, and then Scott is out, and then you get Scott back, and Poffenbarger is on. Like, I get that sometimes how basketball goes, but man, they could just catch a break and be healthy. I think that they can hang and beat anybody in the league. And so you would hope that obviously they figure out a way, like they usually do, go back to the drawing board, see if there's anything they could figure out. But I mean, the way that Sailor is so effective, specifically on the defensive end and the defensive rebounding. They're going to have to find somewhere to make up for that, and I don't necessarily know if they have that on their roster.
All right, so you get to cover the Olympics in the summer in Paris. Do you get to go to New York more than once? And what part of New York are you guys meeting in, and how many slices of original Rays have you had?
Well, we might come back here in May or April for one of the Olympic media summits. And I am down on the Lower East Side, Lower West Side, by the UN. We have a station out here, our company does, PIX. And so we're about a block and a half from there. So we're walking over to that station and doing our meetings there.
That's fun. That's a lot of fun.
It's fun.
Well, enjoy New York City. And we'll look forward
to
getting back with you next week, Alyssa. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Dad.
Appreciate
you always. Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks, Alyssa. Paris is coming up, right? 2024?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, New York, then Paris, then Gay Paris.
But you got to say it like Leo in Titanic, right? You know, Au Paris? Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you go to New York, you want to get, they tell you to get Original Ray's Pizza. That's probably the name that you see all across Manhattan. But there's so many different versions of it. There's Ray's Pizza. There's Famous Ray's Pizza. There's Original Ray's Pizza. Then there's Famous Original Ray's Pizza. I mean, they're not all the same Ray, for crying out loud. And you can't even get that Carnegie Deli sandwich any longer. The largest pastrami sandwich in the history of Earth. Carnegie Deli closed, I think it was 3 years ago. It's been a while.
The Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa in downtown Hot Springs, Arkansas is the perfect destination for your next getaway. Join them for a romantic Valentine's Day getaway with a special dinner or romance package. Or if you're coming to town for live racing, they've got room for you every weekend, including Martin Luther King Day weekend and President's Day weekend. Experience all the luxury and hospitality of a Grand Southern Hotel. The accommodations are sure to please everyone. Visit ArlingtonHotel.com for more details. That's ArlingtonHotel.com.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are influencers on the internet. Which means Tubi is more popular than sponsored posts for digestive enzymes and high coverage foundation. More popular than soft launching your boyfriend. More popular than making boomers explode with rage when you tell them how much you make on a single post. Tubi, it's more popular than influencers. See you in there.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hickey and Hull Law Partners are now here for you and all your legal needs in Mena and the Little Rock area. Hickey and Hull Law Partners specializing in divorce, custody case, civil litigations, and more. Having over 7 decades of combined experience to better serve you and the community you live in. Please visit kevinhickeylaw.com or call us at 479-434-2414 for a consultation or come by an office nearest you. Things are about to get better.
Bill King is the king of college football talk, hosting on Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9. It is the non-playing portion of the season. And Bill, how are you doing today?
Hey, guys. Doing well.
Good, good, man. I heard you say something on your show today that made me sit up and take a little bit notice. You feel that within the next, I don't remember the exact time frame you gave, but 12, 13 months, there will be noticeable public movement towards college football players being paid by the schools instead of NIL. Now, I didn't hear your explanation behind it, and I want to give you a chance to, you know, tell me why you feel like that right here.
They feel they have no choice. I don't think that's something they want to do, but that's where it's going legally in the court system. And the new commissioner of the NCAA, president, leader, whatever he is, Charlie Baker, is all for this, and I think he has the support for it. So that will pass. I would say just loosely within the next year, universities will be paying players officially.
Bill, is it going to be like a cap per position where like quarterbacks make a certain amount? Maybe something where it's something like in the NBA where they have max players, you know, pay for wins, pay for performance. Couldn't get that out.
I think all that's unclear. What it's going to be structured as, who gets what, is there a priority for a position? I would think it have to be, but I don't know that there are any details yet there. I just know there's about 100% chance, in general terms, the universities will take over, which, frankly, if you're going to go to this, they should have in the first place. This farce that the collective is independent from the university, the coaches don't have any say over the payment, is ridiculous. I mean, we all know that's a big lie. Well, it's got to go there. And again, I'm not for any of this stuff, but that's where it's going. And again, guys, I wouldn't be shocked if that's in place for the next season. Now, that might be a little presumptuous and maybe a little overzealous. But if it were in place, I wouldn't be shocked.
Well, it's like, so, you know, we all know, you can say there's no connection between the collectives and the athletic departments, but we know that maybe there's not a connection, but there certainly is, you know, they're driving the same car, they're using the same gas. You know what I mean? They're pretty much in the same boat. And that's why I look at this situation that happened to Florida State last week, where they're now getting, what is it, a 2-year probation? The coach is getting a show cause for taking a kid over to the collective. Like, driving him to the collective was the law that was broken. And it's, I don't know, that comes across as laughable if that's why they're getting in trouble. When everybody, so nobody drives somebody over to a collective. They can tell them to walk across the street. Not going to get in trouble for that, will you, huh?
That would be like, and I'm sure you have police officers that listen to the show. They listen to my show. That'd be like having a police force in your town that is not doing anything about murder, but just jailed somebody for jaywalking. You're not walking across that street. You're going with me. That's how silly this is.
Who's in control of this? Is like, who's the leader? Who do we look to? Who do we point to and say, well, this person kind of, this is, who's in charge, so to speak?
Well, nobody. I mean, we have a new leader of the NCAA, Charlie Baker, but he is admitting his power just in the brief amount of time had been diminished before he got there and will continue to diminish. Who's in power would be somebody like Greg Sankey or the new commissioner of the Big Ten is Tony Petitti. Names like that, those are the guys in charge.
Yeah, those are the commissioners. Those really are the commissioners. And it's like, you don't have, it's like, I can always push back on the idea that when a college football coach or anybody associated with college football says, we're going to an NFL model. No, you're not going to an NFL model, because we have four leagues essentially that are running college football. The NFL is run by one league, one man. They have owners associated with this. College football's more federated, and until there's a super league, you know, that then it isn't the same thing. But eventually, do you think we're going in that direction? If we're paying the players, we're going to get to a point where, I don't know what the number is, 28, 32, 40, who knows, but something in that range where they're separated away from the rest of college sports and college football is its own thing.
10 in the SEC right now have 34 teams. Now, I'm not suggesting anything other than those are the two power leagues. By far, the power leagues. And then after that, you could debate if it's the Big 12 or the ACC, et cetera. But I don't know, unless you could tell me who this would be. I'm not for this concept that we need a commissioner. I don't trust that. And if I'm the SEC office, I'm not turning over our power to some commissioner. And you can't get that done without the SEC agreeing to it. Guys, if we had a commissioner back in 2020, I would say there had been about a 90% chance they'd have canceled all the college football. I don't trust that at all. That's a horrible idea.
That's an interesting point. Very, very interesting point. What'd you make of this Julian Sayin, top quarterback in the class, transferring out of Alabama, going to Ohio State? That's two of the top quarterbacks in the portal that have gone to Ohio State. Will Howard, the other one.
Well, Sayin had just been on campus there a couple of weeks. He'd been committed there for a while, though. And they took in the 6'6 transfer quarterback from Washington, who is a good player and is a threat to go ahead and take that job this spring. And the young man, I'm sure, got his feelings hurt. And you still have Dylan Lonergan, who's a freshman there, who they think is probably at least before the most talented young quarterback they've got. And you got to remember Bill O'Brien, who now is offensive coordinator at Ohio State, was part of recruiting Julian Sayin a year ago when he was in Alabama before he left to go to New England. So there's a lot of connections there, and I'm sure they probably – Ohio State the last couple of weeks is really – and I say this in all fairness – have spent a lot of money, and you're allowed to do that. They got Caleb Downs, who is the best safety in college football as a true freshman, they had to spend a bunch of money on Quinshon Judkins, who was already – Quinshon Judkins probably got five raises while he was at Ole Miss. So they got him and Julian Cillian as well. They've gone nuts here, and they have the ability to do it. So it's a myriad of things that happened there.
Hey, Bill, I saw where the Tennessee Volunteers got the number two quarterback in their class, I believe. Is it George McIntyre? What are your thoughts on him? Is that a good get for Josh Heupel?
The number two quarterback in the class of 25 is right here in Nashville, and the number one quarterback in the class of 26 is here in Nashville. His name is Jared Carter. And McIntyre, guys, if you remember Vandy early 80s, that may date me. But their coach was George McIntyre, and he was there until about 84, 85. That's the grandson. And he's at a private school. He's a 6'6", about 100, long, high-cut, long quarterback who's going to grow into his body. A lot of arm talent, very athletic. Matt Jones, he played basketball. This kid played basketball, too. I don't think he put up 3,000 points like you did, but this kid plays. He's very athletic. So when Nico, and all the assumptions are after the 25 season, he's gone to the pros, this kid will take over. He's got tons of talent.
Hey, when Harbaugh leaves Michigan, even if they hire Sharon Moore, there's still a 30-day window for the Michigan players, right? Even though they're hiring from, they would hire from inside?
That's tricky. Watch. Here's one thing I was talking about. There's one theory that they may go ahead before, and I'm not sure what the semantics of this is, because we're still in the embryonic stages of all this. But there's one line of thinking is maybe they'll go ahead and announce Sharon Moore without Harbaugh leaving. And maybe that's a ploy to get out of the 30-day window. Frankly, guys, I haven't really checked on that. I don't know if that's a trick you could pull or not. It's funny.
Sounds like some shenanigans. Really, it does. Sounds like something Harbaugh would try to pull.
True. Very true.
Well, he's gone, right? I mean, it's...
I assume. Yeah, and then the ultimate destination for him would be the Chargers. Now, again, I'm not your NFL guy, but that's what the word is. We'll see what happens.
I mean, Hugh Freeze is calling plays at Auburn. They just hired the Ole Miss... I think he was wide receivers coach. Guy had been there for like 20 years at Ole Miss,
right?
And worked for Freeze too. But it was really funny because Ole Miss's football Twitter account, and it's of course you almost felt like it was typed out by Lane Kiffin. And it was referring to him that he is going to be a first time play caller, but yet that flies in the face of what Freeze said because Freeze is calling the plays. It's like that was one of those moments where I was like, all right, so Lane Kiffin, who obviously handles his own Twitter account, I think he handled the Ole Miss football Twitter account at that moment, too.
Good point. Now, I got an interesting analogy. I don't think I've used this on your show. Lane Kiffin is what Steve Spurrier would have been if he had social media. Just tweeting out stuff. And then Spurrier's old school, so he'd never have social media. But if Steve Spurrier was interested in social media, all the things that Lane Kiffin tweets about other teams and coaches and little digs here, there is exactly Spurrier, but Spurrier on Twitter.
That's funny. You know, when I listen to you on your morning show, Bill, so they've got a nickname for Lane Kiffin. Every reference to Lane Kiffin is Baby Kiff. If he's still coaching in his 70s, do you still go with that nickname?
Yes, because he's still the child of Monty Kiffin, who was a fantastic coach at Arkansas back in the day.
Yes, he was.
Tampa, too.
Yes, he was.
Yep.
Bill, appreciate you, man. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to meeting again next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill King, Nashville Sports Radio. Could have called Ken Griffey Jr. Baby Griff.
The kid.
You know, at one point, when you're the kid, you know, Ted Williams was the kid, too. At some point... Do you keep that nickname, you know, when you're in your 70s? Gary Carter? Yeah, he was the kid, too.
DJ Lil Yachty. Got to have a little in front of it.
I like that one, too.
You're listening to the Eastside Liquor Halftime Podcast. Check out the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast at hitthatline.com.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half, you know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.